3, 2, 1, go!
Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Force podcast, a podcast from three Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerdy media. Our first episode of our limited series about Ahsoka, where we talk about every episode one by one. We're very excited to talk about this, but even more excited that as we get to reunite with our family from the Ghost, we also get to reunite the entire Triad family because, good news, Bo is joining us for this limited
series. Welcome back.
Welcome, Bo! Thank you for having me all back. It's amazing to be back.
Of course, it's like Luke said in The Last Jedi, no one's ever really gone, and
we were always in the shadows.
Always in the light, waiting to come back
to talk about Ahsoka,
exactly,
the character that we've loved for since Clone Wars and then Rebels, and then to get to talk about it, and we know that it's gonna get weird, and we know you love weird, Mo.
It's the weirdness. I think that's probably what brought me back out of the.
That's what I wanted to ask. It's just because I know, we were talking about this. We were texting randomly this week, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, you texted like, "Hey, can I come back to be able to talk about Ahsoka?" And I was just like, "Oh, wait, if Mo wants to talk about this, it means that hopefully it's because of how much they're enjoying it and not how much they hate it." It's just like, I want to come back to take a dump on it. I hope that's not the case. So I'm very, very excited to hear your thoughts, to see what made you come back to want to talk about this show. However, we can't start talking about Ahsoka without obviously mentioning the context in which we are recording the show, and as we're recording this during the WGA and SAG after strikes, and we're not releasing this. I mean, obviously, if you're listening to this, it means we did release it, but you notice that we're not releasing it as the show has been coming out. We're going to hold these episodes and not release them as in support for all those strikes. So it goes without saying that us here at the Triad support everything that the WGA and SAG AFTRA are striking for, and all of their demands against all the studios and producers. Without the labor of all the actors and writers that make these shows like this, Ahsoka and Rebels and Acolyte that's upcoming and everything that we've come to enjoy, wouldn't exist. So we want stories made by humans for humans about the human experience. We don't want stories written by robots and AI about what they think the human experience is based on an algorithm. So we support them and won't be releasing this until they get a fair deal and get what they deserve. So we stand by the WGA.
We still wanted to record right after episodes were released, though, because we want to keep that excitement of the episode by episode experience. So we are recording it as they happen, but everything gets resolved and humans get what they deserve for the jobs that they are
doing. Oh yeah.
So that's a little intro. Let's start talking about Ahsoka.
Yes.
Mo.
Episodes 1 and 2, Master and Apprentice and Toil and
Mo, what made you want to come back? You saw Mandalorian season 3 probably, and that didn't give you the impetus to be like, hey, let's talk about this show. But all of a sudden Ahsoka comes out and you see those two episodes and you're like, I need to talk about this. Tell us your reaction then, what you thought about watching the show and what made you want to come back to discuss it.
Well, I think if though for those listeners from the beginning, they might remember, Rebels was my jam, I always,
yeah.
I was always in love with Rebels, the way the story was portrayed, the difference that comes from all the other Star Wars stories we've been acquainted to. It was the first, at least in my experience, the first big thing that's breaking away from the Skywalker saga. Mm-hmm. And it works on so many levels. It portrays all of the essence of what Star Wars is. And the moment I saw Ahsoka you know, it's almost like the continuation of Rebels.
Yeah, very much.
It's pretty much what it is. Like it picks up where we left off in Rebels. You know, Ahsoka coming back for Sabine to like, hey, let's go save Ezra and take down Tron if we can in the way. Like,
oh, yeah.
And seeing that, like we, you know, for the longest time, like we had no idea we will ever get to see like the true ending of that. Like you know, it's not technically needed for like the other things that were going on in Star Wars. Like they could just like, you know, that was the ending. Like,
yeah,
to your yeah, deal with it.
Yep.
Like we've got plenty of media done that. Like, mm-hmm. So it's not unheard of. And then,
yeah, mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden it's like, oh shit! Like we are actually getting like the whole story back. Where we're getting the gang back and. So I texted you even before I saw the
episode. Oh, so this was before watching it. I thought it was like after watching. It's like, oh crap!
It was just from anticipation.
No, it was just like that's how under the like the cavern I was that I didn't know like Ahsoka came out until my brother showed me a picture with like he went to Galaxy Quest and got his like star like lightsaber mm-hmm. and he was like, oh, I'm ready. I'm like, ready for what?
Like,
oh, Ahsoka comes out today. I'm like, oh, okay, I need to see that. So I got to see them both, and it was a ride. It was an experience, that's for sure. Everything that's new, it's mesmerizing, that's for sure. I want to see what happens. So, like, finally, we're going to a whole different galaxy. That's just this is a galaxy far, 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 far away. Like we're expanding our universe here.
Right. Which is kind of like breaking some of the theories that people had about, because myself included, I thought that when people were talking about where Thrawn and Ezra were, everyone, mm-hmm. and like I said, myself included, were like, oh, they're in the unknown regions. And we just have to like get them from there. But they're still in the Star Wars galaxy, so to speak. So when that reveal occurred with like when they opened the bronze ball or whatever the hell that's called, and it's just like, oh no, it's a different galaxy. It was like, oh shit, now there are different rules, because like now anything
it opens up many
anything goes,
anything is possible. And I love that the link there's like this like undisclosed and like unnamed link between mm-hmm. this new galaxy and the Sisters of Dathomir. Like there seems to be like, oh, we're gonna learn where this whole like new type of force comes from. Like it might be like, you know, maybe we'll learn that the force is only a thing from this galaxy, and then there's some other type of force. Like we don't know the physics or the minutia of like the force. Like, so we might just be on the verge of experiencing like chaos, and in a good way. Like bring back that childhood wonder of like, holy shit, like there's the force, this is how it works. Like, no. Like, everything, like, it brings back that Han Solo saying, like, you don't know how this force works. Like, that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
like, everything you thought you knew was wrong.
Everything you knew, it's wrong. Yeah. And I can't wait to see, like, that exploration. But, like, the anticipation, the build-up, the bringing up characters.
Mm-hmm.
I do have to say, like, at first I was like, there's, like, the, like, I don't know, a reverse Uncanny Valley. From like bringing like animated characters into like live action, like I don't know, it's still like, at least the first episode for me was still like a bit jarring. But by the end of the second episode, I was like, okay, like my brain was like, okay, you smoothed over the differences, you can reconcile the animation and the action, but. Everything else, like, I'm just like for it. Like, I'm
awesome.
Sure see this whole rabbit hole of the
name. And we'll definitely dig into more of the minutia. But I want to shift now a little bit to Natty, because Natty, I think, I mean, we haven't really gotten into it because I think we wanted to like be fresh when we were talking about the show here. But I feel like you're not as enthused maybe as Mo and I are. So why don't you tell us like your reaction to watching the show?
Yeah, so I've had, you know, my expectations about the show. I wasn't all that excited about it to begin with, to be honest. If you've heard me, I've gone ad nauseum as about, I don't think Rosario Dawson is really pulling off the Ahsoka that I wanted to see, the Ahsoka that I knew from Clone Wars and Rebels. I feel like there's still something missing there. And nothing against Rosario Dawson, because I think she's amazing. But I think there is something to be said about, you know, casting the person who originally voiced a character in animation to help do that transition into the live action version, which is why I think Bo-Katan works so well, because, you know, it was her from the beginning. But with Ahsoka, it's not just, you know, the voice that I'm missing. It's kind of the body movement and how she holds the lightsabers and everything. And there's just kind of something missing for me there. And it's just, it's not coming through as much as I want. So I've kind of just started thinking of her not necessarily being Ahsoka, just being a character. So it doesn't, you know, take away from my enjoyment of the show, because the show itself is very good. It's gorgeous. The action's there. The soundtrack's fantastic. It's so good to go back to Lothal and to see what it would look like in real life. And it's really good. I'm really enjoying Sabine, actually, which I wasn't necessarily expecting to. And I'm still having also a jarring sense with Hera as well, because and nothing against Mary Elizabeth Winstead, she's fantastic, but also I think she's too young, and Hera looks so young, and I'm not getting this like a baby mama energy. Yeah, she looks really, really young, and she's not, you know, there's not this gravitas that you would get from, that we got from Hera, you know, years before. And now that she's a general and a mother herself, not just the ghost's, you know, adoptive mother, now she's, you know, she's this big mama bear from the beginning, and I'm not getting that sense through. Not yet. She's slowly starting to grow on me, but there's something there about, you know, the ghost fam dynamics that isn't necessary. Like, the way she talks to Sabine or about Sabine to Ahsoka, it's not what I would necessarily expect Hera to say. And her shock at the Ezra might be alive thing was jarring to me as well, because I feel like Hera is the kind of person that would have never given up on Ezra. And yeah, it's surprising that now we have an actual clue, but I don't think she would have given up on him in any sort of way regardless. So it would have been like, yay, now we have a clue, but not this like shock that, oh, I thought he, you know, was like dead already. So there's still things that, you know, need to grow on me as well. But I love the Lothcats. Ray Stevenson as Baylan Skoll is amazing. That was one of the best introductions to one of the darker characters that we got him with his apprentice Shin Hati. It was intimidating. They were imposing straight from the top, and they're not over the top. They're kind of like very calm, cool, and collected, intimidating, just, you know, going about the galaxy, doing whatever they want. And there's something very centered about the characters that I really loved. And obviously getting a Night Sister in live action, and seeing the traces of the green magic and everything. And we know now, as Mo was saying, with the opening of an entire new galaxy, that they are free to be weird. I mean, we already know Purgles are going to show up. What else is going to happen?
Yes.
So I'm definitely not 100% sold, but I'm in it for the ride and to see what, because they have a really huge opportunity now to change what we know about Star Wars. And I hope they take it.
Awesome. And it's interesting because all the things that you've said, like, I've seen other people online bring up. However, like, I'm not sure that I 100% like agree with like a lot of that, especially with the characterization of some of the characters.
Yeah.
And before I get to that, like, I guess let's start with my reaction. I mean, I love the show. Yeah. I was very excited for it. You know, I loved Ahsoka since Clone Wars. I really was excited for her, like, during Rebels. So once this show was announced, I'm just like, I think the cynicism that some people had about this show was the same type of cynicism I had about Andor type of thing. It's just like, oh, why do we need this Ahsoka show? And we already had so much of her with Andor. I'm just like, why do we need that show? We already know his. So it kind of goes to show, at least to me, that technically we don't need anything. So it's just, you know, we didn't need the original Star Wars. So it's just like, these are stories that we want to tell. And I think we just have to be open and receptive to what story the story wants to tell us. And, you know, I learned that with Andor, and like now, like I'm trying to apply that with all the different shows that come out. So it's like, okay, it may not be a show that I think we quote unquote need, but then again, we don't need any of the other ones. So it's just being kind of receptive to what it's there to give us. So for Ahsoka, I was very, very, very open in that sense. The only kind of issue that I had with it going into it was kind of the aesthetics of it, I guess, because one of the big things that were starting to annoy me about Mandalorian was how small it looked, because it, you know, relied very heavily on the volume, and it feels like it's on the volume. You know, you kind of feel like you're always like in that little set, as opposed to Andor, where Andor kind of did very little use of the volume. It's all usually like, you know, filmed on location, and Andor film feels very expansive. So I was worried with Ahsoka that I was going to kind of revert back to that kind of smallness of Mando, so, and feel very volumey. It's just like, oh well, yeah, we have these like wide landscapes, but everyone's moving, you know, in this little constrained circle,
like in the little circle,
in the little circle, or one hallway, kind of like Mando season two was all the time.
Yeah.
But thankfully, my expectations were blown out of the water, because the show does not feel. I mean, I think there are moments where you can kind of be like, okay, that's that, you're in the volume, you know, especially when they're when Baylan and Morgan Elsbeth are in the map room. It's like, it's literally a sphere. You're in the volume right there.
Yeah.
And you can literally tell because like you're in that, you know. But in those circumstances, you could get away with it because of the narrative that's built around that set. So it makes sense. Exactly. So in that regard, like, I was very, very happy with it, because the show feels as expansive as I want Star Wars to feel. I think this is the closest we've ever gotten in Star Wars, and I was going to say animation, in Star Wars shows to get the almost that feel from the movies. Because that opening scene, I mean, we get the red crawl and everything, which I'm not sure how you guys felt about the red crawl, and we'll get into that.
I wasn't expecting
but,
it.
But after the crawl, and then we get like the ship and everything, like it felt like the movies, and the production value of the show backs that up. It feels, you know, so high quality, and Dave Filoni nailed the vibe. It feels very, at least to me, I don't know if you guys agree, the show feels very much like a combination of all three vibes of all of the trilogies. Like, you have like some of the vibes from the prequel trilogy in terms of like how shiny and new everything looks, but then like some of the grittiness too of the original trilogy, but then like the aesthetics of the visual effects from the sequel trilogy. I feel like all of those visual cues are kind of compiled in this show in a very neat way that makes it feel very fresh but still familiar. So I was happy with that. I was very happy with the characters too. The only one that I think it's the one that everyone keeps mentioning is Ahsoka, but the problem is that I think we last saw these characters in Rebels. And Rebels, the ending of that show, the epilogue is now, right, when we're watching the show, but the show itself ended like years before the Battle of Endor. So like all these characters, you've seen them like in one place, and now it's a couple of years removed from that moment. So it's just like, I don't expect characters to be behaving the exact same way they were. It's just like the Luke thing. People are like, oh, why isn't Luke 30 years later the same Luke as he was from Return of the Jedi? It's like, well, because 30 years changes a person. So that's kind of why I'm not going to say forgiving, because I think that's not the right word here, but accepting of like why these characters aren't behaving in the way that we would naturally expect them to. And it's just because like I think we're just in a different position, and they haven't been given the chance to finally be themselves, right? The idealized versions of themselves that we've kind of built in our minds, especially with Ahsoka. I think Ahsoka, from what we've seen, is in a dark place, or like in a stoic place from everything that's happened from the post-Rebels finale, and being maybe disillusioned from training Sabine and all these things have kind of brought her into the less optimistic version that we've grown to know. But I think that's going to be the journey, right? In the epilogue of Rebels, we saw Ahsoka the White with the staff and everything. So I think that's the idealized version of Ahsoka that we're kind of building to. So I think that Rosario's characterization is going to end up there. But that's just conjecture at this point. With Hera, I do agree that she was a little maybe like detached at the beginning. But I think that was because, like, in the first episode, she's not really interacting with Sabine, and she's being the general, so it's like, it's been years, so, you know, it's this whole thing where I have to be this, you know, this person that projects this persona. But in episode two, I kind of started getting, like, those mom Hera vibes, especially when she's the hologram and talking mm-hmm. to Sabine, like, in the hospital and everything. I started, like, getting those, like, traditional Hera vibes. But the character that I think they absolutely nailed 100%, Sabine, I think Natasha Liu-Bordizzo is doing a spectacular job.
And she's getting criticized a lot on the internet, which really surprised me, because as soon as she opened her mouth, I was like, that's Sabine. That's Sabine, hands down, the movements, everything. I loved her from the beginning. But yeah, I was looking online and she's getting a lot of criticism.
Well, the internet's also a dangerous place, because...
And it's a dark place sometimes.
Who on the internet, right? It's just like one of these things. Because, like, interesting that, like, people are attacking the, you know, the Asian person, you know, instead of, like, maybe... So, it's kind of like, is it fueled by a little bit of discrimination? I don't fucking know.
But she's nailing Sabine.
Definitely.
I'm a fan already.
Chopper, though. But yes. I was going to say Chopper was number one and then Sabine.
Oh, but... Chopper was perfection.
I've never been a fan of Chopper in Rebels.
Yeah, that's the problem, Goose. You don't like Chopper, but I've always loved Chopper because he's like the most asshole droid there is. I love him.
And they did him 1-to-1, so it's kind of hard to not mess him up. I did like the one thing when, like, he's asking Hera if, like, she went through her stuff, and then he says, yes, you did, and you can absolutely, like, hear him say that, but with the droid voice, so I will give them that. That scene was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But I feel, in that regard, I feel a little bit like Mo with the characters, where, like, Mo, you were feeling like some of the character designs going from animation to live action were a little jarring to get used to the translation. I felt that with Chopper. I feel Chopper's 2-1-to-1 from the animation counterpart. It doesn't feel like they kind of filtered him to be, like, real life.
So I'm just
like, like, when you place him next to BB-8 or R2-D2, he definitely feels like an animated character. So
I'm fine with it. Chopper, like, never had a memory wipe. It's just this all crazy. Like, it makes sense. It knows how to even, like, speak some English words. It's like, it's been so long with, like, Hera. It just translate beeps into, like, words.
I mean, that, versus you, like, in that context, it is pretty hilarious. I will say that.
I'm with Nani. Like, I know it's an alien. We don't know how they age. You know, it's
possible. But it's
such, like, a young. It looks like such a young, like, actress for, like, a more mature character that's supposed to be. Like, you don't see the maturity. It almost seems like fake. Like, that mom instincts, like, yeah, you know, you're saying the mom thing, but you don't feel like a mom.
Yeah, it's like when they try to, like, make a character, like, fake wise. And this one, it kind of feels like the mama energy is kind of forced. So, I mean, we're only 2 episodes in. I don't want to be overly harsh about it. I'm just telling you how it made me feel.
Interesting. But my question then to that, though, and I think it's going to be like a twofold question in regards to, like, one, us watching the show being fans of Rebels, and then two, people watching the shows and not knowing anything about Rebels. So I'll table that. Do you think that if you hadn't seen Rebels and didn't have that attachment to the original version of the character, you would feel that way? Or do you think that this is just, like, particularly just informed because of how you think that she should act based on how you
It is definitely informed in how I think that she should act, because I going into the show, we don't really know what her relationship is to any of the other characters, because it hasn't really been explained. I think it was a smart call to kind of, like, redo the epilogue, just because then you set the base for where you want the characters to be in this show, and, you know, where you want them to end up, because clearly we're not gonna they changed that epilogue from Rebels, which is something that had really confused me, because, as you were saying, we had gotten at the end of Rebels that, you know, the white cloaked Ahsoka with the staff, and then when she started showing up in live action in The Mandalorian, all these things were like, well, where's this Ahsoka that we ended up with, like what happened. And when this show started and we find out that she had taken Sabine on as an apprentice and that clearly something had gone wrong and they had a falling out, I thought this was after the Rebels epilogue. And then because of that falling out and whatever time they spent trying to search for Ezra and that failed, that's why Ahsoka had become a little bit more disillusioned and we're getting a different version than we got with the, you know, the cowl and the white and the whole thing. But now, clearly, with episode 2, they did basically frame by frame that last scene from Rebels, except now we don't get, you know, the robed and white Ahsoka. And as you were saying, I'm probably thinking that that's where the season's going to end up, or that's the journey that Ahsoka has to go through to get herself to there. But it, you know, I'm glad that that's clarified for me, that's why we have this Ahsoka, because we're kind of retconning, you know, what the end of Rebels showed us Ahsoka to be. And I think we were talking a little bit about it before the episode, and you said that it made sense because maybe Filoni thought that he was never going to get to develop Ahsoka again, and that's the version of Ahsoka that he wanted at the end, so that's how she ended up in Rebels. But now that he has the opportunity to do an entire show about her, and he gets to flesh out how she gets to that point better. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm trying to, like, stop trying to force Ahsoka what I want her to be or where I want her to be.
You can't force, but you have to accept people for who they are.
I know, but it's so hard because we are so informed before, you know, we fell in love with these characters so hard. Like, I mean, my hair, every single hair in my body stood up when we saw the Phantom. They did such a good job, and to feel like you're part of the family again. Like, I started screaming when we saw Seb in Mandalorian, and all that's informed by the love that we have for these characters. And I think the way that they do it now, and that they establish kind of that base in the first two episodes, because the show could be very negatively affected by the fact that a lot of people haven't watched Clone Wars or Rebels, and you don't really go into a show attached to any of the characters. And it could go either way. Like, if it's done well, and just with this show, you get to express how these relationships work and how important these people are to each other, then I think organically people will love the characters as well. But if they expect people to only love them if they also love them from Rebels and Clone Wars, then it's going to negatively affect, because a lot of people don't watch the animated stuff. Yeah. So it could go either way, I think.
Which then is like now my inverse question, coming from the show, like from the outside, right? Let's say like our parents or our siblings or our friends or people that might be Star Wars fans, but they only watch the movies or Mandalorian, right? Only the live action things. They haven't seen Rebels or the Clone Wars. Do you feel, try to think of it objectively, obviously, do you feel that the show can stand like independent of that, and that it did a good job to give you the information that you needed about these characters to kind of hit the ground running, to kind of understand where everyone is and continue with the show? Mo, what did you think about that?
I think objectively, no.
I have to agree.
They, you know, like, I know they tried. They like to give you a summary of everything that happens, but if you have no clue of who Thrawn, who Ezra, what happens? Like you'd be like, who the hell are?
What is happening?
Why do I even care? Like we just came out from the war. Like,
well, but to counter that, when you start A New Hope and you have the crawl, it tells you all these characters. It's the exact same thing. It's like, oh, who are these characters and why should I care about them? So if we
there's a build up to it. Like you don't. It's only one character you're looking for. You're looking for a princess, and then you're looking for the next, like, it's not like here, like, oh, you're looking for at least two missing characters. You're supposed bad guy and you're supposed like hero in exile, because that's what they are. And then like all of a sudden, like, combine, like, whoever is coming to Ahsoka that hasn't seen Rebels probably is coming from Mandalorian.
For sure.
So like it's all of a sudden, it's a complete break of, like, you know, what everything that's happening. And then it's like, oh, we're going to get to a different, like, to me, it's exciting that we're going to a different galaxy. But Then I'll be like, we just started here. Why are we completely
losing? Why are we already?
like we just started a journey here and we're oh yeah, F that. We're going somewhere else. Like, it makes sense for fans that are older.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they can. Like, yeah, we've seen the stories in this galaxy. Let's go to another galaxy. But someone new is like, wait, I just started to put the pieces together of what happened after the war. And now you're telling me that, oh yeah, let's go to another galaxy. Forget about all of that. Like, I think objectively a new person coming in will be like,
yeah.
Okay, like, mm-hmm. like this, it's just, it's a continuation of Rebels. That's what it is. Like,
mm-hmm. not
and, it's not, and it's not made in like the prequel way of any hope.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Nani, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the problem is because there is so much backstory that's kind of necessary to get to where we are with these people. And yeah, you're right, Goose. There's stories that have a bunch, like when the original trilogy came out, the prequels didn't exist, and there's all the backstory that we are completely unaware of, but we're getting characters that are kind of very little informed about what's going on, and we learn with them. Like, Luke has no idea what's happening, and we get to kind of find out with him what's happening. But that's not the case with any of these characters. All these characters are informed about what's happening. And I think that's one of the reasons that a lot of people latched onto Mandalorian right away, even if they didn't know anything about Star Wars, because it's kind of a character with a clean slate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have all this baggage that he's been dragging around with a lot of these series. And then mm-hmm. these characters, even though, again, they're trying to let you know kind of where things are, but I don't think they're doing a good enough job about it. And it's a double-bladed sword, obviously, because if you get too descriptive, too slow at explaining what had happened in Clone Wars and Rebels, you're going to lose those fans, because they're going to be like, I already know what has happened. You're not bringing anything new to the table. What are you doing? Just remaking what I already know into live action, which doesn't work. But if you're too dependent on people knowing about all that baggage in the past, then it's going to be hard for them to be interested from the beginning, because they should have no idea, like, who Ezra is, why do people care, why is everybody so obsessed with finding Thrawn. People don't really know that Anakin even had an apprentice, you know? So who is this person? Why should I care? You know, so I don't know. I've talked to people who aren't Star Wars fans, and they don't really have any intention of watching the show. So I think this is more for us in the animated, or who love the animated series. But, and you know, it's the culmination of the Filoniverse. That's, it's clear.
Yeah, that's
but it. They need to be able to, and it, again, it's only two episodes, to kind of better inform what the plot actually is and what the intention of the show is, to kind of separate. So if you're a new viewer and you have no idea what happened before, you can still be attracted to watching this new story.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, I think it's still too tied to the baggage that it runs with.
I mean, I think I passionately disagree with everything everyone has said, just because I think it comes to, like, the perspective of, like, how we are consuming, like, all these stories in, like, this modern era of interconnected storytelling. And, like, to an extent, we've been, like, with the MCU or DC to failing degrees, and Star Wars, or not, well, Star Trek's not actually, I mean, Star Trek's connected, but not in the same way as, like, these stories are. We're kind of used to being like, okay, well, you have to kind of know in this linear progressive fashion some of these information so that you can enjoy the stories. And I kind of don't see it that way. I see it that there are different points in which you can begin your journey with these stories and be able to either enjoy them for what they are individually, like the sequel trilogy or the prequel trilogy, the original trilogy. I think you can watch each of those independently and enjoy them for what they are. Or you can be like, oh, okay, well, obviously there's a connected aspect to them that have more stories that come into them that I will get more enjoyment of if I then watch it. Because obviously if you watch the sequel trilogy on its own, there's all the baggage of the original trilogy. But that trilogy makes sense on its own. Now, you could watch it on its own, like, understand it. But if you want to add more nuance to it, you watch the original trilogy and obviously enriches that. And same with the prequel trilogy, right? You don't need to watch the Clone Wars to understand the prequel trilogy or vice versa. But if you watch both, it enhances all of that. So one thing I would like to do is actually talk to a normal person that doesn't follow Star Wars.
Ask them what they thought of the first two episodes.
I don't know normal people. And the normal people that I do know do not watch these shows. So I would like to meet one of them and be like, okay, this, watch this. Don't watch anything else. I want you to watch Ahsoka and tell me if you like understand the character and their, you know, wants and needs and like where the story's going. Because I felt like the first time I was watching, and especially the second time I rewatched it, I was just like, okay, are they giving the information that they need to give to like understand like the motivations of each character and like some background? And I felt that that's a yes. Like they give you the crawl so you can know like the mythic background of the story and like everything you need to know. The Imperial remnants, they're searching for this object, Ahsoka's the former Jedi, blah, blah, blah. And then like through the rest of the show, they give you like the context of like, oh, she was Anakin's apprentice. And obviously that's going to come in at some other point in the series because we know Hayden Christensen's coming back in some degree. So there's going to be extra added context to that. And then each character has a line or two or like some moment of dialogue that contextualizes their past journey and their, you know, and their wants for the coming of the show. Like with Sabine, we get that she trained with Ahsoka and that they're jaded. They haven't seen each other for years. And that affects like them moving forward. With Hera, you know, she's a general and she's been doing all these things. Same with Ahsoka. So like, I feel like the show did give you like the minimum information you needed to kind of start. And then I feel like it's actually kind of a good way to do it, because then if you're watching the show and you want to know more, hey, there's this great show called Rebels, and you'll get so much more enjoyment out of it than you go back and recontextualize it and hopefully make that same journey for fans of the prequels and be like, oh crap, there's this show called The Clone Wars that's going to make the movies even better for me. I think maybe I'm being too kind to the show in a way that like I wasn't being to Andor in the lead up to it. But you know, Andor turned me around, and I think that Ahsoka kinda got me hook, line, and sinker. Especially because, you know, my baby boy in Blue Throne is gonna be on it. So I'm really looking forward to that.
You think he's gonna show up in season one?
Well, we know he's gonna show up in season one because of the trailers.
But it could be minor
because I think it's only 8 episodes.
It's only 8 episodes, but it's it's supposed to be a limited series.
Oh, so it's supposed to be one season. As far as I know,
that can always change. That can always change. But it's supposed to just be a standalone thing, which I think doesn't make sense because I'm just like, the story is a little too big for only one season. But then we have to keep in mind that Filoni wants the film.
Yeah, that's where he probably will conclude the Filoniverse.
I'm not sure how that's going to work.
I'm not sure either.
That's besides the point. But like for me, that Filoni movie is going to be like lame Star Wars Avengers. Is there going to be like that scene at the end with Captain America? Who's going to be the Captain America? Din Djarin? It's gonna be like Avengers. I feel like it's gonna be lame.
Yep, and it's gonna be lame if they do that. Yeah.
But whatever. That's a couple of years down the line. We don't have to worry about that right now.
That's not right now.
And if it comes, you don't have to watch it.
That's true. That's a good point. Okay. And that's a good point for everyone watching. If you don't like something, you don't have to watch it.
Don't watch it. Well, anyway, going back to Ahsoka. Okay, by the way, when they did that at the end for our friend Ray, I started crying. It's so sad that we have lost such an amazing actor. Mm. And he's pulling off a character to a T.
Yeah.
So I actually wanted to ask, because I know there was some debate about it online, but I'm not into social media or anything, so I'm not really clear about what was happening. But they're lightsabers, because they look a little orange instead of red. Do you think that's on purpose? Because it's like degraded Jedi sabers that they kind of maybe didn't necessarily bleed the kyber crystals correctly or something, and it is that color on purpose, because the Inquisitor's lightsaber did look actual red.
It's definitely on purpose, because Filoni confirmed that it's on purpose.
Okay.
He hasn't said why, obviously, because Filoni's not going to reveal anything.
Yeah.
But there is a purpose to why the lightsabers are red, orange, or blood,
whatever it is,
or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Because we got Hugh Yang confirming that Balin Skull's lightsaber is one that he made, you know, as a Jedi in the past.
Which, and how cool probably is having Hugh Yang.
I know. Hugh Yang is perfection. I can't believe David Tennant is voicing him, and it's so good. The character design is fantastic. I know, but it's good. It's good.
The money. I'm happy. I'll reprice it and give me money. And he can record that in his closet, you know? He just has to do the voice.
It's amazing, but it's so glad that we got to see a character like Hugh Yang come back too. There's so much, you know, lore there into the building of the lightsabers. That was always one of my favorite parts in Clone Wars and stuff, when we got to see, you know, the building of.
And that's what I like about having brought Hugh Yang back, is that they brought him in that same capacity from Clone Wars.
Yeah.
It's like, he's not like, oh, well, this is just, we're going to bring this droid back, and you're going to know, if you're a fan, that he's the droid from Clone Wars, but he's going to be doing something completely different. No, I like that.
It's like, no, I know about sabers.
And he knows about sabers, and he has the thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, chef's kiss. I'm like, perfect.
Perfect.
So good.
And I like also the changes to Ezra's lightsaber. That's something that I really wanted to mention, because Ezra's second lightsaber, the green one, which is the one Sabine wields, of probably like my favorite lightsaber design from Star Wars Rebels. But when I saw the changes that they did for the show, that kind of looked more like Cal Kestis's lightsaber from Fallen Order, which in my mind, I'm just like, okay, one, sell more toys. But then two, I think the practical reason was because of the design of the original emitter from Rebels. In live action, you can't do it that way, because the blade won't, you know, they can't put the stunt blade in there, so they had to change it for practical reasons so that they can, you know, use it in a practical way. It was just a conjecture on my part, but I love how they did that, if my theory is correct, and then justified it with, oh, Sabine made those modifications because now she made her lightsaber and all that
stuff. Which makes sense, because you're keeping, you know, a little bit of legacy, because you're bringing back Ezra's, but then it's also Sabine's, because she's made it her own, made her own little modifications that are good for her. So it's kind of like bringing those two bridges together.
Well, I see what you did there. Oh my God, that Ezra Bridger pun. And I like that it's Hugh Yang who like mentions and note and like, you know, calls upon the modifications. And it's just, again, it's just like that's his character from Clone Wars. So it's delicious. And the quip that he has to Hera, like during that scene, I just loved it, when like Sabine's doing, you know, trying to get the original location of the HK droid, and it's about to blow up. And Hera's just like, yeah, go for it. And then Hu Yang's just like, yeah, because you're a hologram. I love that. Was hilarious.
That was like also like jarring. Like, Ahsoka just saw like how crazy these explosions are and how many things it will destroy. And then she's like, yeah, F it. Open it here, like in the middle of a hospital. Like, I don't care if people die. Like,
She knows. She can see the future. Remember, she's a Jedi. Uh-huh. She knows.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Massive destructive power. It's fine.
I'm no longer a Jedi. I don't have to concern myself for the safety of others.
It's fine.
I'm a former Jedi.
Nothing happened. Yeah. It was fine. Hu Yang expected it.
But it's still such a BS thing. Like, even if nothing happens, take precautions. Like, there's a hospital. There are people there.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't a hospital. Maybe
it was something. They were in the middle of Lothal. They were in the city. They were not anywhere.
Which I get. But you know,
the head was not the bomb from the opening. So don't know how big that explosion would have been. Probably considerably smaller.
Yeah, but considerably smaller compared to that epic explosion that we just saw. It's still
because you would expect, you know, Chopper to be an asshole, because he is, because he literally says that when they're flying away, it's like, just shoot it down. It's like, I can't shoot it down. There's an entire town below it. And, you know, Chopper, you expect it.
Chopper wants results.
Chopper is
shoot it down. Just shoot it down.
Results. See? And if they had followed Chopper's advice, Elspeth wouldn't have gotten the hyperdrive.
So many wars, you know? Like, Chopper is a true general as well. Like, Hera's a general, but Chopper is also a general. Like,
he's the only one that has the will to carry
I feel like they maybe Chopper and Thrawn might become like best friends, and then that's when the end of the whole
maybe but
speaking, and justify the means
speaking of people who like are friends, Marok has not Marek. Baylan has some friends in Marek, who is a former Inquisitor, who now serves as a mercenary. There's lots of theories on the internet. So lots of people are theorizing that maybe it's Ezra. Some people are, our friend Alex from Star Wars Explained says that it's the Eighth Brother from Rebels, which I think is actually the most likely one. Other people are saying that maybe this is the canon version of Galen Merrick from The Force Unleashed, because it showed up like in the credits that Sam Witwer provided additional voices for the show. Some people are saying that it's Barriss. We're finally gonna know what happened to Barriss after the end of the Clone Wars. Do you guys have any theories, or do you even care who Marok is in Ahsoka? Nani, start with you.
I had no idea that this discussion was happening until you just mentioned it. Completely honest.
The internet discusses everything. Masked character, we don't see their face. We must speculate ad nauseum.
Well, I mean, to me, the character is already compelling. One, they look super cool. Yeah. Two, the way they fight is really awesome. I think some of the best choreography so far has been him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when the lightsaber, the second side turns on, the actually throwing it and calling it back.
Oh, and how Ahsoka dodges it was so cool. It's like, yeah. So casual.
So good. Uh-huh. It's so good. And it's just like classic Inquisitor everything. So I don't feel we need to speculate it to death. We're going to find out, or we're not going to find out who he is. I don't think at the end of the day it affects the story all that much. But who knows? Maybe it turns up to be something like insane and we're all shocked. But aside from that, I just think he's a really cool character so far. And that's the end of my speculation.
Mo, how about you?
You know what? I hadn't thought about it, but this moment, it'd be like a young Palpatine clone. You know?
Oh my god, I hope not. I hope not. I did have an actually moment, because some people are saying like, oh, what if it's Rey's dad? And I'm just like, actually, if you had read Shadow of the Sith, you would know that that's not possible. But I restrained myself because I don't want to be that person.
What if it's our boy, the one and the only Jar Jar Binks, continuing the dark legacy?
I'm going to go with no, because his helmet would be different.
We're not...
His helmet would need to account for the stock eyes. So I'm gonna, just on anatomy alone.
We don't know what's the power of the dark side, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it changes your, yeah. Maybe.
Shapeshifter, you know.
Maybe it's Kelleran Beck. He went to the dark side after saving Grogu because he couldn't find him again. And that way you can get your Jar Jar in there. I do think that it might be the... I do think Alex is right. It's probably the Eighth Brother, but I do think that they might pull that little twist and just make it oh my god, I forgot the name of the guy. The guy from The Force Unleashed, just so fans are just like, oh, there's a canon version of this character now. And now you can calm the F down. But ultimately, honestly, I thought that the Inquisitor was going to die like in the first episode. I thought it was going to be like a false flag, red herring type of thing. It's just like, oh, you think this is going to be something that's going to be like a big villain. But it's just like, actually, it's opening scene. It's Ahsoka fighting him. And then that's done and over with. And then we move on to the bigger, better bad guys, mm-hmm. like Thrawn or whatever. But I was surprised that that wasn't the case. And that he's going to factor in, he or she, I guess, factor in more in the show. So we shall see. One other thing I want to discuss with everybody. We're in the Eye of Sion is what the ring is called, right?
Yeah.
We're in the Eye of Sion. Obviously, the design of the ship is very different. And one thing that I noticed about it, I don't know if you guys noticed about it, but I kind of wanted to discuss it because it ties into the galaxy that we're going to explore. When the hologram Baylan and his apprentice and Shin show up, it's mm-hmm. a very different style of hologram projection from what we've seen in Star Wars.
Yeah.
At all. Like, usually we have like the blue flickery light thing. Yeah. But here it looked like
amazing.
Here it looked like a gel.
Like the grainy or that kind of moves. Something. Yeah.
What did you guys, I mean, obviously now you noticed it, Mo. Did you notice it at first? And like what did you think of having holograms portrayed differently specifically on this scene?
It's new tech, baby. I mean, you're going. Like, no, I thought it was like some like Dathomir, like extra galactic, like technology. Yeah,
because I think it had like a little bit of a green tinge to it. So it could be some kind of like Night Sister technology combined with magic kind of thing. Because they're kind of hinting at that maybe, you know, the Night Sisters are originally maybe from the other galaxy. Mm-hmm. So it'd be really cool if that's, you know, this is our technology. It's way better than regular holograms. It looks more alive. So
I mean, it's possible that, you know, technically when they portray the witches of Dathomir, they seem to be like more tribal. Maybe they're like, yeah. Mm-hmm. This is like the exodus of, and that's why the Aes Sedai.
That's a good point. Maybe they're exactly, right. Maybe they're like in Mandalorian, they're like the this exile. Is the way helmet Mandalorians would like keep the old ways.
Yeah. And then the other galaxy combine their magic with technology.
I like that. That could be cool.
I mean, that's what I gathered from it, that it was like some Night Sister technology or something.
Yeah.
It's interesting because originally, and like in the trailers, we didn't get to see that hologram, but we did get to see the bridge. And obviously the bridge is like very curvy and gold and right. All that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, I thought like, oh, this is Chiss technology, which is the race that Thrawn is a part of. Because at that point, I'm just like, well, we're going to the unknown region. So Thrawn is back with the Chiss. So he's in a ship from the Chiss Ascendancy and all that stuff. But now that we know that he's in another galaxy, it's just like, oh, so maybe that technology isn't Chiss at all. Maybe that technology is something completely different. And something else that people have been talking about online is some connections with the Sepho from Jedi Fallen Order, which, if you haven't played the game, it's like the ancient race that Cal Kestis goes to their temples to explore. And it's a race that was from a different galaxy, came to this galaxy, like to the Star Wars galaxy, and like set up their temples, but then had to leave it because they were corrupted by the dark side and whatnot. So it's interesting to see how that game has already a species of Force users that had to leave this galaxy, and also a game where not only do you have them, but then also have the Night Sisters. So I wonder if like Filoni's gonna, I don't think so, because Filoni's not one to do that type of thing. He usually ignores other stuff and just does whatever he wants. But like if he's gonna like tie this into like the video games a little bit and like take that race, and you know, see like what their connection with the Night Sisters are, and see what is happening, like in this new galaxy that we know nothing about. And is it tied with the Mortis gods? Is this, did the Mortis gods transcend that plane where in that planet they were from, and are actually physically manifested in the other galaxy? And that's just their technology, the race of Mortis children, or whatever the fuck it is. And that's just going crazy, assuming that Filoni is going to go crazy in this new galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hope so.
I really hope he does.
Yeah. One thing I'm still, like, confused. I don't, you know, like, in the Red Crawl,
mm-hmm.
it said, like, Thrawn wanted to galvanize. I'm like, does he want to, like, chuck them? Does he want to, like, turn them with zinc and coat them in, like, shiny material? Like, when I read it, I was like, I'm sorry, I'm taking chemistry. I was like,
it's the other definition.
Like galvanizing is like when you use shot to like turn something like Chinese thing. And I'm like, oh. Like,
It's the other one.
He was a chrome army.
I mean, he is getting it. The ship is pretty chrome.
The ship is pretty chrome, so I don't know. Maybe that's the plan.
One last thing before we start wrapping up. Obviously, we see Ezra's hologram. And it's a different message from the message that he recorded at the end of Rebels. It's one that he recorded specifically for Sabine. Mm-hmm. We know that everyone's racing to find Thrawn and or Ezra. We know that Thrawn's showing up, right? Because we've seen it in the trailers. And probably Ezra as well, because they already cast somebody. Do we think Ezra's falling to the dark side? Do we think he's still on the light? Do we think he's friends with Thrawn? What do we think that it's Ezra's current situation?
It's been what, like 15 years?
That's a good question. It's been a couple of years.
Yeah.
Let's look it up while you guys talk.
Okay, well, I think like if you're gonna like follow the threads from like Rebels, that, you know, Ezra already was pretty much almost like Darth Maul's apprentice. So we already know that Ezra's okay dabbling in like understanding the greater aspects of the Force, like not just like, oh, this is the Jedi Code and don't look around. Like, so I like, he's already like an open-minded person, and we already know Thrawn. Thrawn will just make, you know, whatever's the best decision for survive. So if it's making friends with Ezra and the whole galaxy, like, you know, like it makes sense that they'll, you know, either be like in a hate-love relationship, or they'll actually like legitimately like,
yeah, it's been like 10 years. Yep.
Yeah, it's what, how much? 10 years?
Around, yeah.
Yeah, like 10 years. And to them, they might just think, like, we're never going back to our galaxy, like, at this moment. Like, it could just be, like, you know, they started afresh. Or, like, it doesn't make sense that they will hold grudges for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Thrawn is a very practical person, so I don't see him.
Thrawn is practical. Ezra.
Practical, logical.
Like, he's going to grow in the next 10 years and be, like, what, 30-something? So he'll be, like, older, wiser, be like, you know what? I have to deal with what it is. Like, I see them like being friends, or at least in that, like, you know, convenience relationship that, you know, we have to be each other's like support, because we have nobody else to like lay our backs on.
Do you guys remember this movie, the Lost in Space movie that came out like in the late 90s, early 2000s? You remember Gary Oldman's the bad guy in that movie. You remember when they go into like the time thing and they go into the future and Gary Oldman turn into like the big Spider-Man thing, and then but he has like the little Will Robinson is like his you know, friend or whatever. What if it's something like that where like Thrawn actually becomes like this big evil bad person, but then Ezra is convinced that he's, you know, someone that he has to follow, and it's like this toxic relationship where like they're, you know, had this parental relationship, but it's very toxic, obviously, because Thrawn maybe I like to always say that he's an anti-villain, that he's not, you know, a bad guy in the classic sense, but maybe like in this new galaxy he loses his hinges and it actually goes into super bad guy territory, and it becomes like something like that. I don't know.
It's like the new tyrants of the new galaxy.
Maybe. I don't know. Nani, what do you think?
I think it could go either way, honestly, and I think a lot of it would have to do with if they were actually together during their exile, or if they just like went their separate ways once they got there. So obviously there wouldn't be, you know, influence amongst each other, and they could have like ended up on opposing sides of whatever is going on the other side. But I think if they did actually spend that time together, that they could have influenced each other a lot, just because they are both pretty open-minded people. Like Mo was saying, Ezra himself, you know, had already been tempted through Darth Maul, but there was always this balance from his relationship with Kanan, and knowing that Kanan actually, you know, sacrificed himself, and Ezra sacrificed himself to save his family as well. And just because I think he understands different aspects of the Force because of his, you know, connection to the different creatures, I think he knows that the Force is way more than what the Jedi have told him. So I think he would be open to not necessarily being strict Ezra, just straight Jedi, like Mo was saying as well. Like, he's open to, you know, both sides of the Force, and that not necessarily everything's black and white. I think Thrawn is similar as well. He wasn't necessarily part of the Empire because he drank the Kool-Aid and, you know, thought that the best way to, you know, rule is through the Empire. It's just he was doing what he thought was best for his people. And if in the new galaxy there isn't the presence of the Empire, I think it would have to do with what the, you know, what the situation on the other galaxy is. Is there like you know, an all-powerful, something similar to the Galactic Empire kind of thing, or is it all more republics, or is it, you know, a bunch of planets with no organization that are currently at war with each other? Like, all of that, I think, will have to do.
Oh, shit. I like that. That sounds crazy.
With how it is. Like, yeah. Are we getting... Because we could. Because it could be something more like Firefly, which is, you know, cowboys in space. And very old Wild West trying to survive. So, and if the ruling structure, it could be like the queens or the Night Sisters, and they're all powerful. So it's just open to possibilities, I think. And it's going to do a lot with what it was that they were confronted and what they have had to survive for the last 10 years. And if for them, it has been 10 years. Because sometimes when you're changing, you know, like you were saying, well, we don't know the physics of this. So we don't know how time works over there. So maybe for them, it was instantaneous. Or maybe they've been around for way longer than 10 years.
Or maybe, it's possible they get there and they're all dead. Like,
I like that idea, but I don't think they're going to.
Check it out. What if they find, you know, they go and it's like, it's been
a
like.
Dead galaxy?
Like, no, but the other way around. It's been like few generations since like the arrival of Thrawn and Ezra and like they became like, you know, the. Like you'll still see like statues of them, and like maybe like their family, like their long descendants, and like
I like that.
They'll be like the legend, like the legendary mythical beings. That they came with the Purgils and like
established themselves as gods.
Established themselves. I mean, it makes sense. Like
that's pretty cool, actually. I'm visualizing that. I was like
a force powerful Jedi and a super strategical. Like they can do what Darth Vader wanted to do, control the galaxy with his son. Like it's possible they actually became that.
Interesting.
The whole galaxy now. Like it's been like thousands of years in the future for that galaxy. So they're long dead, but their empire remains forever strong.
Oh wow.
Interesting.
And then be like, oh shit. We should not bring these people back to our galaxy.
We should not be here. Yeah, we should not be here right now.
We made a mistake. We opened the bridge to our galaxy for them to come.
You know, if that's not what ends up happening, you should write that as fan fiction for sure, because that sounds that's
amazing.
Because cool. Because if you start that as a fan fiction and it starts as a Star Wars fan fiction, you can change it to, you know, change the things from Star Wars to be something else. I could see you being a best-selling author, because that's a good idea. Get that going. I know you're busy with school, but
but maybe my breaks I'll start writing it. It does sound like a cool idea, though.
It is
a very cool idea. Yes always moments of
the Mobius strip keeps unraveling. But yeah, this has been like an excellent conversation. Like I am definitely looking forward for an episode 3. I don't know if anyone had any closing thoughts before we wrap up for today.
If you did ask me if I hated something at the beginning, I don't know why I hate the end crawls. It's like so like Game of
Thrones. I love the end crawls. The only good end credits in all of the Star Wars shows.
I was like, just keep the whole plain Star Wars thing you've always done. Just give us a black screen. Like, but then now that it's like, it's all like the whole Game of Thrones thing, like looking at the map and like jumping from side to side. It's like so cheesy. I hated it.
I loved it. I think these are the only good ones. Because the fonts are just like beautiful. The Kevin Kiner music is just incredible. Because let's talk about that. Like the music on the show is just on point.
Yeah.
The only thing that I did not like wholeheartedly that I would say like this was bad is the title card. I think it sucks. It's and especially like in that first episode, that was such a missed opportunity when like Baylan gets Morgan out of jail, and then they're talking about finding the map or whatever, and then she's like, oh, or he asks, I don't know who asks each other, like, oh, who's the person finding that's gonna find the map, and I thought they were just gonna cut to black and bam, and there's the title card, and then they just like Ahsoka Tano, and then they just walk out for like a couple more seconds, and then the title card. I'm like, what the? Just don't even say the name. Just cut to the title card. That was a missed opportunity, and I will criticize that. I know I've been reacting very positively to the show, but on that specific instance, I'm like, that was stupid.
You missed it.
You missed it. Yeah, you missed it.
You missed it. And the title card sucks. It's just
that's what happens. You know, that's Filoni. You know, sometimes gets too busy, doesn't come back to us for like feedback.
Yeah, he hasn't texted us in a while.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Like, what were you thinking?
He's like, hey, we could have given you some quick notes.
It's,
you
just know, some quick
Zoom pointers.
Just listen to us. You'll go far, kid.
Yeah.
Annie, what about you? Any last words of wisdom?
No, I'm actually looking forward to continue to watch it more than I thought. So that's a good
usually
part.
That's what happens when we have like these discussions. You're like, okay, maybe there's a little bit more.
But we'll see. We'll see. I don't think it's a lost cause about these characters. We'll see if they grow on me. But aside from that, I mean, the show is enjoyable. So I just need to like get out of my own head and stop expecting them to act how I want them to act. And I think that's, you know, that's all I can do because the show itself so far is good. So we'll just see how unafraid they are to take it in weird directions.
Yeah. Because
again, if they don't, missed opportunity, it would be.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree.
Yep.
Right, that's great. So I guess with that, sign us off. I mean, we're definitely very excited to continue this journey and to have it once again with Mo. So Mo, thank you so much for volunteering to come back and and complete the triad as the ghost families being, you know, reunited
here.
Because you know, I feel like we're going into like the Fast and the Furious moment of Star Wars, where Familia. it's all about family now. it's very poignant, so thank you.
Bring some Coronas and we'll just have a barbecue. Yes.
Some medallas.
Well,
in our case,
until next time, we are Triad of the Force. Remember to like, subscribe, leave a comment, ring that bell, let us know what you've been thinking about Ahsoka. We have no idea when this will actually be released so that you can comment, even if it's like done. It doesn't matter, we still want to have the discussion. So we are Triad of the Force once again, completed for this limited series. And until next time, may the Force be with you.